Thank you, Brother Bob, and good evening, everyone. If we were to attend a talk anywhere that promised to improve our life, I'm sure every one of us would expect that our lives would improve materially. We would earn more money, we would have more goods, we would perhaps have a house or a larger house, and so on. But this chapter that we have read is a critical chapter in all of the Bible. It is the chapter that ends what is called the Sermon on the Mount. It is Jesus' key speech, and in it he lays before the disciples what is essential to become a disciple of Jesus Christ. Now, if we read the three chapters, chapters 5 and chapter 6 and chapter 7, we will find that these chapters are very straightforward. There is very little, in fact, practically nothing, in any one of these chapters that is difficult to understand. But did you catch the end of chapter 7? As Jesus finishes this talk, as he finishes laying it all out before the people, and there were lots of them, this was their reaction. Verse 28, "And it came to pass when Jesus had ended these words, the multitudes were astonished at his teaching." Astonished. They were absolutely amazed. And these people were people who were used to being educated by rabbis. They would attend synagogues. They would hear rabbis giving very deep theological talks, explaining the intricacies of the law and the Old Testament. But nothing affected them like these three chapters that Jesus delivered to them on the hillside. They were absolutely astonished. Why? For he taught them as one having authority, and not as their scribes. But he didn't have a certificate. He didn't have a diploma. He had no theological degree from any seminary. So what was it that could be described as authority? There's only one conclusion that we can come to. That is that Jesus penetrated into the hearts and the minds of everyone that heard his message. And what they heard was like nothing they had ever heard before. He wasn't speaking about theology or prophecy or difficult concepts. He was talking about practical living. Very practical living. Now, we've all been and heard many talks, and we've listened to talks on prophecy. We've listened to talks on various parts of the Bible. And we've been taught. But what have we done? Have we reacted? Has the message really done anything to change our lives? And so it was this question that really caused me to ask the question, how indeed does the Bible improve our lives? Does it improve our lives if we can see the times laid out that God has given to us in his prophetical outlines? Well, on some of us it will have an impact. And it'll cause us to dig deeper into the book. But not everyone. And if I could summarize the benefit of these three chapters, the Sermon on the Mount, if I could summarize what Jesus taught or what Jesus said and what we have contained in just these three chapters, if I could summarize it in one word on how it would actually affect our lives, the one word would be obedience. You see, none of this will do anything for us, not anything at all, unless we put it into practice. You see, we can explain it, and I could stand here and go through the details of everything that Jesus said in these three chapters, and you might say, that was interesting. I really enjoyed listening to that. But it's absolutely useless until we put it into practice. And that's how Jesus delivered the message. He delivered it in such a way that everyone who heard him understood that concept. Jesus wasn't trying to explain complicated things. You'll see that in the text. There's nothing complicated. What Jesus was doing to everyone that was there on that hillside was telling them that this is how you live. And do you know, brother, you know, if we actually put these things into practice, our lives will change. And no matter what our situation in life, whether we are rich or poor or in between, our lives will improve. Because what we are gaining here is not just knowledge. What we are gaining is a way of life that has a profound effect. It's very possible. In fact, it's highly likely that we can be religious. We can accept certain religious teachings, precepts, doctrines, and not really get to the depth of what Jesus is saying here. And I think that's the problem that many of us have, is that we only go so far in life. We don't really get to where Jesus wants us to be. And only by getting to where Jesus wants us to be can we actually appreciate in full the life and the teaching of Jesus Christ. Let's begin. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. And with what measure you meet, it shall be measured unto you. And when Jesus said those words, everyone was taken aback. Because what Jesus was saying to them, it's all right to look out at other people and see what other people are doing and assess the lives of others, but what about your life? What if we put the magnifying glass onto your life and see what you are doing? You see, it's very easy to come to conclusions about how other people live. But what about us? What about me? With what measure you meet, it shall be measured unto you. And that seems to be how we live life. We look at others, we read about others, but do we really dare to penetrate into our own lives. Why beholdest thou the speck, he says, that is in thy brother's eye? But considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye. Well, that seems pretty comical, doesn't it? It almost seems like Jesus is just being very humorous. And certainly this wouldn't apply to us now, would it? Or would it? How good are we at seeing the issues that other people have in life, but we really don't come to grips with our own weaknesses, with our own faults, with our own shortcomings, with our own lack of reaching out to help others? And so you can see why the people were amazed at what he said. Because while this sounds like it's grossly exaggerated, what Jesus is doing is focusing on the very issues of life that affect every one of us. The concepts that he's dealing with here are not just about the Jews back on that hillside back 2,000 years ago. What Jesus is telling us is that these are the issues that face us all today, and we have to look very carefully if we're going to understand exactly what he's saying. It's too easy just to dismiss it and say, well, that doesn't apply to me. But if we are brave enough, we will see very clearly that each one of these teachings does have an application in our own lives. We have to look at life. I'm going to ask you whether you turn to these passages or not is entirely up to you, but I would like you to consider with me some further passages that I will refer to. This one's in John's Gospel, the 8th chapter. And verse 7, when they continued asking Jesus, he lifted up himself and said unto them, he that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And this is an incident where a woman caught in adultery was brought before Jesus that he would make a judgment upon that woman. And Jesus, He turned things around so that the men who brought that woman would have to look at their own lives first before they could condemn anybody else. He that is without sin among you, who is it? Step forward, throw the stone. He stepped down, stooped down, wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. You see, that is what the presence of Jesus Christ does. The presence of Jesus Christ will, if we hear what he has to say, we will understand that before we look at others, we better look at ourselves. We better see what's going on in our own lives. And so the message that I would like to get across to each one of us, and myself included in this, is that do we really look at our own lives critically? Do we really examine what we are doing in life? Or is life for us just a series of things that we do and we keep on doing, and our lives are so full and so busy that we really do not penetrate and understand what the real me is doing? And that's what Jesus is doing here in this Sermon on the Mount. And I'm going now to Galatians chapter 6, where the Apostle Paul had this to say. He said, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, looking to thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." You see, that's the law. The law of Christ is to come alongside somebody who needs help and help them. "For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden. Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit or to the spiritual mind shall of the Spirit reap eternal life. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap, if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them which are of the household of faith." That's our life. That's how we improve our lives. You see, improving our lives is not going out and getting as much as we can for ourselves. The biblical recipe for improving our lives is to help others. "Let us do good unto all men, especially unto them that are of the household of faith." So we begin with our fellow believers, but we take it beyond, and we help and look for benefit in other people's lives as well. "Give not that which is holy to the dogs," Jesus said. You don't give what is holy to the dogs. What did he mean? It wasn't difficult for a Jew to understand exactly what Jesus was saying. I'm going to take you to a couple of passages in the Old Testament, which was, of course, the textbook for the Jewish people and is still the Jewish textbook. I'm going to take you back to the book of Leviticus, which is commonly understood to be a part of the law of Moses. Now I'm going to read to you what a Jew understood about that which was holy. And I'm going to start at verse 21. "And whosoever offereth a sacrifice of peace offerings unto the Lord to accomplish a vow or for a freewill offering of the herd or of the flock, it shall be perfect to be accepted. There shall be no blemish therein. Blind or broken or maimed or having a wen or a scurvy or scabbed, you shall not offer these unto the Lord, nor make an offering by fire of them upon the altar unto the Lord. Either a bullock or a lamb that hath anything superfluous or lacking in his parts, that mayest thou offer for a freewill offering, but for a vow it shall not be accepted." So the Jew had to offer something that was perfect upon the altar. But there was something else. It's found in the book of Exodus. In the book of Exodus, also in chapter 22. And this is what the Jew was commanded. In the book of Exodus, chapter 22 and verse 31, it says that, "And ye shall be holy men unto me. Neither shall you eat any flesh that is torn of beasts in the field. You shall cast it to the dogs." So the men of Israel, under no circumstances could they offer an animal that they found out in the field that had been attacked by a wolf or by a lion and left. They couldn't put that upon the altar of God as a holy offering, nor could they even eat it themselves. The only thing they could do with an animal that had been attacked by another animal was to cast it to the dogs. And so when Jesus, in giving this speech, here recorded by Matthew, "You don't give your holy offering to the dogs." But there's something that is taken up in the New Testament, and that is that we ourselves become an offering. In the Old Testament law, it was an animal that was offered. It was a sheep, a ram, or a bullock. But the offering that is made now, and it was instituted in the time of Christ, was that we become the offering. As Paul writes in Romans 12, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service," or your reasonable worship. So that's what is holy, and that we offer to God, we offer our bodies. And so we don't give ourselves over to be destroyed or to be consumed by the dogs. What are the dogs? The dogs are those animals which prey upon the animal parts that are given to them. And so in life, we don't give ourselves over to the influences in life that will destroy us and consume us. "Neither cast we our pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you." Pearls? What are pearls? Why does Jesus use the language of casting pearls before swine? Well, pearls are also referred to in the 13th chapter of Matthew, and at verse 44, where he says, "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in a field, which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field." Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. And so we see in this parable that Jesus gives us here about the pearl, that the pearl is something of great price that you give everything for. You're prepared to give up everything you have in life for that pearl. You do not allow that pearl to be trampled and destroyed. You don't allow whatever influence in life is going to destroy that precious hope, that precious faith that is without price. "Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and ye shall find, knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. Three things: ask, seek, knock. We notice in the three things here that they are all active. Things that we have to do. We have to ask. Seeking is active. And knocking requires effort. It is only when we apply ourselves to seek, to ask, seek and knock, that there is a result that is absolutely guaranteed. It shall be opened. Everyone that asketh receiveth. Everyone. There is no exception. And this is the astonishing thing about Jesus' message. There's nothing difficult to understand. It's all here. But what Jesus is saying is you've got to do something. You can't just sit and listen forever to wonderful teachings and doctrines. Jesus said this: what you have to do is you actually have to get busy. And you seek. Well, first of all, you ask, you seek, and then you knock. I would just like to quote to you from a passage in the Psalms, and this is what it says in the 69th Psalm. You see, what we're saying here out of Matthew chapter 7, is not new. Actually, the concept that we're presenting tonight is a biblical concept that has existed all the way through the Bible. The Jews in the time of Jesus pretty much didn't get it. But here we see in Psalm 69, verse 32, it says, "The humble shall see this, or the meek have seen it, and are glad, and your heart shall live that seek God." Your heart shall live that seek God. A tremendous life is yours. Your heart, your inner being, is going to come fully alive if you seek God. That's what the Psalm says. And of course, that is what is behind the words here in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. In verse 8, the results are certain. "For everyone that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth. And to him that knocketh, it shall be opened." We have to come to a conclusion then. If we haven't received, we haven't asked. If we haven't found, we haven't sought. If it hasn't been opened, we haven't knocked. You see how clear it is? There's nothing complex in what Jesus has to tell us. But what he tells us is absolute. There is no difficulty in understanding what he's saying to us. The results are certain. Verse 9, "What man is there of you who, if his son shall ask him for a loaf, will give him a stone?" Now, in the land of Israel, there is a stone that looks identical to how they used to make their bread in those days. So you could trick your son could say, "Hey, Dad, I need a loaf of bread." "Oh, here you go. Give him a stone," and he might think he's got a loaf of bread until he feels it and he knows, no, it's not a loaf of bread at all, it's a stone. Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him an eel? A serpent is in the Authorized Version. Is that how you would treat your son? Well, Jesus said, "Well, if then you being evil know how to give good gifts unto your children," because of course you wouldn't do that as a parent. No parent, if the child asks for something to eat, wouldn't do it. So Jesus now elevates this principle. How much more should your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him? So this makes us think. We have been created. Who gave us life? Who created us? Well, we all have parents or had parents. And we have the experience of our parents providing for us and looking after us in our childhood. But we know that there's a much greater being who has created life and created us all. So if that heavenly creator is so much greater than the earthly creator, our mum and our dad, surely he is going to see that we have what is absolutely essential that we can live. And so Jesus, he introduces this concept. If your earthly dad will give you a loaf of bread, what about your heavenly dad? What's he going to do for you? He's going to give you absolutely what you need. But notice what Jesus says in verse 11. How much more should your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him? You see, again, we have to ask. And that's where Jesus puts the emphasis. And that's why we're not endowed with gifts from God. Because God will only give us the good things, and we'll only get them if we ask. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. The golden rule. Do to others what you would have them do to you. Notice at the end of verse 12 it says, this is the law and the prophets. So this verse 12 is a summary of our Old Testament. The Bible, the Old Testament of our Bible, is summarized in this, in what Jesus gives us as the golden rule in verse 12. I'm just going to quote you also from Matthew. From Matthew chapter 22, where he says, Jesus said unto him, this lawyer that came to him, and he said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And this is a response to the question that was asked, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? So that's how Jesus responded. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Two commandments. Love the Lord our God with all our heart and all soul and all our mind. Love our neighbor as ourselves. And Jesus said, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Or, in other versions, on these two commandments, the law and the prophets are based. So that is the basis. So, again, not difficult to understand. Perhaps not so easy for us to put into practice. Verse 17. Even so, well, shall I start at verse 16? Do you shall know them by their fruits. Talking about the false prophets in verse 15. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. Fruit. Now, this is the easiest way that we can determine what kind of lives we're leading by what kind of fruit we're producing. What is our life? What is our life doing? What is our life producing? Now, we are assessed by our neighbours and by the world, by the house, kind of house we live in, the kind of car that we drive, the kind of position that we hold, our level of income, and so on. And so that's how the assessment is made in the world. But it's not the assessment that Jesus Christ uses. Jesus Christ uses the assessment, what are you producing as a person? What kind of fruits are you producing? And I'm just going to refer to the Gospel of John, just so that we have some idea as to what he's talking about here, because he's not talking about material fruits, material possessions. And so Jesus is, he tells us, and in the Gospel of John in chapter 15, we see this. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Greater love hath no man than this, than that a man lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you, that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that you love one another. If the world hate you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. So what Jesus does, and what Jesus is presenting us, is not pleasing to the world. The world hated him, and he said the world will hate you. But the fruit that you will produce is a fruit that is evident by the fact that you will give your life for your friends. And all we can say to that is, whew, that's amazing. You see, improving our lives is by doing things for other people. It's not gaining things for ourselves. It is more blessed to give than to receive, says Jesus. So if we're looking at life and looking at how we can gain more, we're looking in the wrong direction. We're not looking in a direction that will actually improve our lives. The only way that we can improve our lives is to improve the inner being. And Jesus is giving us the recipe for success. He's laying it all out. Now I'm going to go on to verse 24. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man. So you see, hearing the Bible message is just a part of what we've been asked to do. What Jesus is saying is, once you've heard it, you've got to do it if you are truly wise. But then he gives an illustration of what the wise man does. The wise man builds his house upon a rock. Why would you do that? See, it's very easy to build a house, especially in the land where Jesus was. You find a nice flat section and you build your house. The only problem is the rain comes and the floods and the winds. Trials happen in life. The house that is built upon the rock, it doesn't fall. It stays firm. But if you want life easy, and if you want to get things easy and look good, you don't go to all of that effort and go down to the rock and build upon the foundation that goes down and is built upon that rock. You just do what's easy. And you do what looks good. But it doesn't stand up to trial. And that's life for most people. Most people will build the house that doesn't stand up and is eventually destroyed. That's life. But if we are wise, we will hear what Jesus is telling us here. We'll hear his teachings that he gave in these three chapters. We've only had a bit of time just to look at some in chapter 7. But we'll see how Jesus is penetrating right within each one of us to change our lives, to give our lives point and purpose, to make our lives fruitful and productive. Not easy, but productive. And when we look at these concepts, and we can truly understand what really does improve our lives, we will understand that we can face the trials of life. We can face sickness. We can face disease. We can face the things that come upon us. But we've got a huge treasure. We've got a pearl that you couldn't even buy. It's worth so much. It's the pearl of great price. It's the kingdom of God. If only we'll think about these things. If only we'll put them into practice. I think we would have to be like those Jews who were there on that mountain and were just astonished at his teachings.